Recently, Canada's highest court rejected a detention measure called the Security Certificate System that would allow Canadian authorities to detain foreign-born terrorism suspects indefinitely without charge while their deportation was being reviewed. Canadian Chief Justice Beverly McLaughlin wrote, "The overarching principle of fundamental justice that applies here is this. Before the state can detain people for significant periods of time, it must accord them a fair judicial process." This decision strikes a powerful contrast to the Military Commissions Act passed last year in this country, the appeals court decision that we saw recently that did not allow Guantanamo detainees to access the federal courts here in the United States, and the case of Turkmen that the Center for Constitutional Rights fought and unfortunately lost in the courts recently. In this country, we've basically stripped federal courts of authority to hear challenges through petitions for writs of habeas corpus. It's good to know that our neighbors haven't. Amnesty International Canada has long campaigned against the detention measure, and we're pleased to welcome Alex Neave, Secretary General of Amnesty International Canada.
Thank you very much.
Can you tell us a little bit about this Canadian Security Certificate System?
Well, the Immigration Security Certificate System has been in place in Canada for quite a number of years. It's received a lot of attention in the aftermath of September the 11th, when it's been used in a number of cases, but it actually predates September the 11th. And it's a process under which non-citizens in Canada, against whom there are security allegations of some description, and we often don't know much about the substance of the allegations, have a security certificate imposed against them, which then kicks in a process that's problematic in a number of ways. They are detained and subject to quite lengthy periods of detention in many cases. And then the legal proceedings that are instituted to look at their case and determine whether it's legitimate that they were subjected to this certificate are deeply flawed. They don't come anything close to meeting international standards governing fair trials. The individuals don't really have any kind of meaningful opportunity to mount an effective defense. The bulk of the evidence is withheld from them. They have no chance to question the witnesses who are the sources of the key allegations against them. They're actually kept out of the courtroom for many, many days of the hearings. And all of this is of particularly grave concern because what's awaiting at the end of this process is a decision whether or not the person is going to be deported from Canada. And in almost all of these cases, and certainly the cases post-September the 11th that Amnesty International has been following, we're talking about individuals who are going to be sent back to countries where there's really hardly any question at all that they're going to face serious human rights violations, including torture. So the consequences are grave, and in some instances, the person's very life may be at stake, and it's all premised on a deeply unfair process.
Can you tell us about some of these cases that you've been following?
All of the cases of recent concern have been Arab Muslim men, some of whom have had permanent resident status in Canada, which is not obviously full citizenship, but means that they've come some way through the Canadian immigrant processes and have a right to be able to stay and live in Canada. Others were at earlier stages in their cases, were in the process of having made refugee claims, for instance. They came from a variety of countries, Syria, Egypt, Algeria, and Morocco. And all of them were accused of differing levels of involvement in or support for terrorist activities. Two of the Egyptian men are alleged to have been involved in an extremist fundamentalist Egyptian organization, one of whom was actually tried and sentenced in absentia in Egypt and convicted of membership in that organization, but never had an opportunity to defend himself in those proceedings. But as I say, we really don't know a lot more than that because the evidence is withheld. It's certainly not shared publicly, but it's also not shared with the men themselves and their legal teams.
Tell us about the recent court victory.
Well, organizations like Amnesty International had been working for years in concert with other NGOs, legal academics, the men themselves and their lawyers to try to change this process. And a lot of that involved political lobbying, but there certainly has always been a very concerted legal strategy as well. So there's been the two planks to the strategy here, trying to get the politicians to agree that the process is unfair and should be reformed, while at the same time trying to get the courts to agree that the system is unfair and ordering the politicians to reform the process. With time, I think it became increasingly, sadly, clear that politicians weren't up to the challenge on their own. We've been through two different governments in the last few years here in Canada. Both of them showed absolutely no willingness to take up the challenge of reform and show the kind of leadership that would have been involved in making sure that this was a system that complied with international human rights standards.
Now, just to insert something in here on that issue, you know, we're facing that in the United States in the sense of trying to get our Congress, which is now Democratic, to change some of our laws that are similar, particularly the one around habeas and denial of the right to go to court. And, you know, I don't feel optimistic about it. It's very, I mean, I've always had, you know, we all have these expectations, and then in the end, the courts are the ones that wind up granting us the rights. And it's interesting to hear you had the same experience in Canada.
Oh, I think absolutely overwhelmingly that's becoming the case here. And it's actually the senior levels of court that we're having to look to as well. At lower levels of court, and I think there's been some of this experience in the United States as well, again, judges often don't have the right courage or insight or don't feel that they're ready or prepared to be the ones who take the first courageous step forward.
Alex, it's the same here exactly. You know, we just lost, as you know, the Guantanamo case is 2-1 in the circuit, the second time we've lost in the circuit, and we now go to the Supreme Court where we have a narrow majority, but at least a majority.
Well, that's exactly what had happened here with respect to the security certificates. The lower level of court, which is our federal court here in Canada, at both first instance and the Federal Court of Appeal, had consistently upheld the security certificates, had ruled that they do conform with the Canadian Constitution, our Charter of Rights, that they're a fair balance, that they adequately protect the rights of the individual detainees, etc. And I think all of us knew that if anything was going to give, it was going to have to be at the level of the Supreme Court. And so once it, not just one or two, but three of the cases were granted leave to appeal to the Supreme Court of Canada, and then were all consolidated into one group, all of the organizations who have been concerned about this knew that was where we really had to focus our attention. So last June, when the court held the hearings, groups like Amnesty International, but a range of civil liberties and Muslim organizations and refugee agencies in Canada all banded together, and many of us were granted intervener status and were present, made submissions to the court highlighting the key human rights principles that we felt were at stake here.
Alex Nave, who's the Secretary General of Amnesty International in Canada. Alex, we interviewed your fellow countrywoman, Maureen Webb, last week, the author of a book on global surveillance, which I just finished. It's a magnificent book. She makes the point that the United States was very influential, perverting, if you will, the law of Canada in these undemocratic ways. And I wondered whether the security certificate system in Canada was in any way influenced by America's misleadership.
Well, I think the system itself, as I said, predates September the 11th. So it goes back quite some time, over 20 years, actually. So it can't be attributed to the current very problematic environment and the kind of influence that does come from south of the border. But what I do think has played out over these last few years is the lack of willingness, the absence of leadership on the part of the Canadian government as it became increasingly clear that Canadians were very concerned about this system, that a whole variety of authoritative bodies, including a number of UN human rights agencies, were criticizing the security certificate process and calling for it to be reformed. The fact that the government consistently failed and refused to live up to that need to push forward with some reforms, that I think is probably in large part attributable to grave concern that they didn't want to do anything that would be interpreted south of the border as Canada going soft on terrorism. And you saw that when the Supreme Court decision did come out a couple of weeks ago, and our ministers and other spokespeople were out there responding to it. There certainly often was that question raised, you know, Minister, are you concerned that south of the border this is going to be viewed as Canada going soft on terrorism? That always lingers there as the big question, how will the American government respond to this, and is that going to cause problems in the relationship?
You know, Alex, on that issue, when I've been giving talks lately, I say, well, let's look at Canada, because Canada seems to still have either democracy or a semblance of democracy left, and we cite this recent decision and then recite, of course, what Canada did with Mahar Arar, the Canadian citizen who was deported and tortured in Syria, and the fact that they Canada awarded him $9 million, and I'm sure you guys were involved in his case as well. In fact, I know you were. So it just seems to me that Canada is at least pushing forward to some extent.
And I think that is the key message that, that our government and our commentators and all Canadians need to repeat and be very proud of, is that this is not about Canada being soft on terrorism or Canada not being concerned about security. Of course we're concerned about terrorism. Of course we're concerned that there be meaningful security. Those are human rights imperatives. But what developments like the Maher Arar case, the recent Supreme Court decision, and then the decision on the part of our Parliament not to renew some problematic provisions of our Anti-Terrorism Act, what all of that demonstrates is that Canada's message to the United States, to the world, to Canada, is that our approach to countering terrorism will always be entirely within the framework of international human rights, that that's what human rights and justice demand, but also durably in the long term, that's our best recipe for security.
Alex Neve, on that note, we're going to let you go before your voice goes completely. We thank you for joining us today on Law and Disorder. Alex Neve, Secretary General of Amnesty International Canada.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks
so
much,
Alex.
Alex.
It was great.
All right.